Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden, and this is the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Truth straight up.
It's truth straight up. Well, the truth straight up is just when you thought Colorado's Republican Party chair, Britta Horn, couldn't get any worse, she did. Right?
No, she can't get worse.
She can get worse.
How can she get worse? So, how is that possible?
She's resigning, so you can't be in disgrace, right? After everyone voted, they had no confidence in her. But on her way out, she is stabbing the party in the back. She's leaving. She's only there for like 10 more days, right? She's stabbing the party in the back and doing everything she can to sabotage a tremendous grassroots victory with the opt-out vote. Remember, we talked about it last week, the week before even. A judge ruled that the 75% requirement that the party needs to have of its SEC members to vote to opt out of this disastrous semi-open primary is unconstitutional. It just needs a majority. Well, the majority of the SEC members have voted repeatedly to opt out. So it looks like the opt out is well on its way, right? It's a giant victory. And Britta and all of the rhinos and the uniparty establishment folks who were able to kind of sleaze their way with weaselly answers saying, "Oh, I kind of support the opt-out. I kind of do," which is what Britta said repeatedly. "I kind of do, but it's really very complicated."
Now, well, they say, "I support the lawsuit, but not really the opt-out itself." But, you know,
these weasel answers. Well, finally, now that the opt-out is on the verge of becoming a reality, their true colors are showing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing everything they can to sabotage it. So what does Britta do? Rather than congratulating the lawyers who brilliantly won this court victory, she fired them. She fired them, and she didn't even tell them they heard through the grapevine that they were fired, right?
Randy Corcoran.
He was in the middle of a trial, so she fired him. And then in the meantime, John Eastman, great constitutional lawyer, who was on the verge of filing a new motion that would clear the way to start moving all of this forward, Steve Klenda, Britta Horn's personal attorney, who has billed the party some hundreds of thousands of dollars in corrupt legal fees, right? After we fired him, he calls up John Eastman and orders him on Britta's orders to not file that necessary legal work.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, and she's even done better. So then they try to call an emergency meeting of the executive committee and to overcome Britta's, you know, but you have to, in order to call a meeting, you have to first ask the chair to call it, and she won't call it, then you call it yourself. So she said, "Okay, I'll call it April 18th, the day after she's no longer chair. As a practical matter, it has to be filed prior to that." I mean, it's just, I mean, she's unbelievable.
Well, and not only that, the motion that needs to be filed has to be filed very within the few days here, right?
Yes.
So she evilly scheduled the meeting where they could vote to force her to tell Klenda, you know, "Let us move forward on this. This is the great victory." She said it for after that. Not a lot of room to maneuver, but it just really shows the viciousness. And it also shows, you know, the rhinos, all the time they said, "Oh no, we think it's a good idea. And, you know, we only need Republicans to vote in Republican primaries." A lie. The whole thing's a lie. We've been saying that forever, but now they have no way to hide behind it. I mean, what is it that Eastman wants to do that she's preventing him from doing?
Filing a preliminary injunction telling the Secretary of State that only Republicans should be able to vote in the Republican primary. And
seems reasonable.
Yeah. So you'd think that wouldn't be very hard, right? You'd think every Republican in the world would be that. But no!
Oh.
No!
Why would Britta want people who are not Republican. I mean, the judge even noted in his ruling that the Democrats and the unaffiliated voters are meddling in the Republican primary, right? And as I said many times before, their goal is just to destroy the primary system in Colorado altogether, both Democrat and Republican. And they just want to have jungle primaries where rich donors selected. At least in this system, as imperfect as it is, if you're just a regular citizen, you have a shot at actually making a difference and getting on a ballot. But under the system that they're trying to create, it'll be billionaire donors will do backroom deals and pick a couple of candidates that they all can live with, and that'll be our choices. And that's what Britta Horn is doing. I just find that just so unbelievable that she would fire the winning lawyers. And how can Klendo do that anyway? I mean, Klendo here again, he's representing the party, representing Britta, because these are the lawyers who did all of this work on behalf of the party.
Yeah, it's just amazing stuff. And you know, she's going to go out with a flare, with a total flare. I mean, it's amazing stuff. We're going down to the assembly in Pueblo. I guess it's Pueblo. And I guess that's her last hurrah. I wonder what kind of reception she's going to get.
I just wonder, given this, if she's going to try to pull more shenanigans or try to. Are you looking for something here, Chuck?
I am looking for something. I'm looking for the Denver Post article they seem to have removed from the entire website
we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. Well, it's no longer, unless I'm missing it somehow. They've simply removed it from the entire website.
Look at that. That's topic number two. That's going to wrap this one up first.
Okay. Well, I'm still looking. You go ahead.
I don't know what she's going to do, but it just seems, again, if her motion, she just stabbed the party in the back. A typical Republican snatching, you know, defeat from the jaws of victory, right? It's like, we won. It's like, no, we're just like,
no, we're not going to win. No, no.
Kind of tying in with that, the way that it works now, you can be a grassroots candidate and get on, right? And Jeff Hurd, as we talked about before, blackmailed President Trump into endorsing him. And then Hope Shepelman, who was gaining ground on Hurd, her campaign was surging, took him for the team, basically, because Trump said, hey, my midterm agenda, everything is in jeopardy, because Hurd said he would vote against everything the president wanted. He'd vote with the Democrats 100% unless the president endorsed him. And so he held the party, he held Trump's agenda hostage. But he's not particularly popular, right? And so the grassroots said, and I agree with this, we shouldn't let her just roll into it. So Ron Hanks, who we all know, he's been a Senate candidate before, he was a state legislator, great guy, great grassroots warrior, really smart guy. He announced today that he is going to go to the assembly and ask the assembly of state central committee members in CD3 to nominate him to be a candidate for CD3. Right. And here's the thing, without the assembly system, he wouldn't be able to do that. He wouldn't be able to raise the money, fight. Jeff Hurd has like millions of dollars from the Americans for Prosperity, right?
Literally.
I think realistically, kind of this late in the game, does Ron Hanks have a chance to beat Jeff Hurd? I don't know. No. But at least he deserves to be, unlikely.
Yeah, but at least he's standing up for the grassroots.
The primary, right? I mean, Jeff Hurd, who after he blackmailed Trump, what did he do? Just the other day, he came out with a post. The only congressional person to do this, by the way, at that time, criticizing Trump for the handling of Iran. It's like, thanks to nothing. I mean, these rhinos? You got to wear bulletproof vests backwards or something like that because they stab you in the back all the time.
Yeah, we're good at that.
The assembly, then, you wanted to...
Well, you know, we're going down there. The only race that really makes any difference, I think, is the one for governor. And strangely, nobody wants to run for any other office, more or less, because Republicans can't win anything statewide because they've rigged the system so well that it's even not a competitive anymore. I mean, I think we've had Ted Trimpa kind of come on and say, yeah, not in his words, but... We've overdone it.
We've gone too far. You win a race or two every so
often. Well, at least pretend you could win a race. And then maybe you'd have some candidates who want to run. But the governor has 20 candidates, I think. Attorney General, one. You can vote for this guy.
That's right it?
The goofy looking guy.
Michael Allen.
Michael Allen, and he's from CD4.
He's a candidate for...
Or maybe it's five, four. Yeah, CD, it's judicial district four. Rather.
Okay.
And you can vote for him or you can go home because the other candidate withdrew. You can run for the treasury for the treasurer, but there's only one candidate there, so there won't be.
At least the voting will go fast.
Now there are five candidates no one ever heard of for the Secretary of State, because Janet Griswold went in there, so it's thought that there may be a possibility that a Republican could win, and there's one candidate who was an independent, Weller, but all the other ones, you have no idea. So that one will depend solely on whoever the speech is, because nobody knows what they stand for.
Right.
And there's no way of checking, so you'll just get who you get. Strangely, our former colleague, Jimmy Sangerberg announced, I'm running!
Hope for Secretary of State.
Yeah, I hate Tina Peters, and I hope she stays in jail till she dies. Which is not a popular, good in the Democratic Party.
Not a very popular Republican.
Not a very popular. So he said, and I've got, who do I have endorsing me? Yes, sir. Eli Bremmer, our favorite establishment hackaroo, Mr. Rhino himself, and another runner, Wayne Wynn. Yay! Yay for Jimmy. A week later, Jimmy says, no.
This doesn't seem that fun.
No. And I'm not sure why he said no.
No one would give him any money.
What?
Maybe no one would give him any money.
Well, no one's going to give Jimmy Sangerberg any money. Maybe Phil Anschutz will, but so what? He already knew that. He should have figured that out before he jumped in the race and embarrassed. Oh, remain an investigative reporter. Exposing the wrongful deeds of others. Well, never doing anything myself. And then we've got the go against Bennett one. Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper.
And Doshi, who is great.
He's great.
He's doing well, Janik is.
Yeah, and now we meet Colonel Marquette. This guy right here. There you go. Be excited. And he has these guys all supporting him, which are a really strange group of Hank Brown, Rhino, Nighthorse Campbell, semi-dead Rhino, and Tom Tancredo, a beloved one, and a guy named McCormick. I'm not sure who he is. But it's a weird campaign. You know, they're coming in with money to send a. Janik Joshi could not send out this.
No, he sent out a bunch of mailers.
Did he? Okay,
oh, yeah. So we've had a. No, Janik Joshi, I think he's raised $500,000. He sent out a bunch.
We're voting for Janik Joshi, not some. And the guy's only a colonel. I mean, you stayed in the Army that long, and you kind of flopped out if you drop out at the colonel level.
Interesting, as you said, the governor's race, and we'll have a wrap-up on Monday of all of this. It'll be interesting to see. I'm curious about the numbers. Number one, the main person, and probably the front-running candidate, Barb Kirkmeyer, is not even going through the assembly. She's already petitioned onto the ballot. So we've got basically, and there, as you said, there are like a billion candidates out there, but Scott Bottoms and Victor Marx, I think, are perceived as the two to watch, I guess. Victor Marx creates a lot of stir, but I don't know how many votes that translates into. Scott Bottoms, I think, has a very loyal base. And I think my prediction is both of them will emerge from the assembly and be on the ballot.
Well, as a practical matter, what's his name? It's already on the ballot.
Victor Marx. He did the petition. Yeah, here's one thing I would point out. So we listened. Victor Marx was on the Jeff and Bill show. I like Jeff and Bill on KHOW.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it's clear that they're in the tank for Victor Marx, right?
Really?
You listen to that interview. It's like.
I'm not sure Bill is in the tank.
Well, not Bill. But it's clear Jeff is in the tank. Yeah. And then I guess is Candace.
And then Bill is not raising any objections.
No, it is in the tank for Victor Marx. They had one person, and they didn't even ask it, right? A caller wrote it. And it was the only caller question they took, essentially asking Victor Marx, you know, is he for opting out? Does he want a caucus or a petition system? And you can only choose one or the other. And he chose both.
It's a yes or no question. I choose yes and no.
So here to me, it's clear that he is in favor of the semi-open primary and money.
I'm not sure that's true.
But he's certainly not opposed to it.
He doesn't know what he's for.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those campaigns to say, don't take a position on anything, and therefore you don't manage to piss anybody off.
Right.
And somebody who really did that incredibly well, quite frankly, was our good friend George Brofler.
Yeah.
When he ran for governor and then went back to AG and lost badly there to Phil Weiser, but he basically, you know, everybody thought that he agreed with them. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought he was more of a MAGA, more of a grassroots. No, he's by and large a Rhino Republican, a likable, wonderful Rhino Republican. But I didn't know that until all of a sudden he came out for red flag laws and other things. We're all going, what happened to you, George?
And now
he has his own show occasionally, replacing Dan Kaplis. I guess substituting now his own show. Substituting for him.
Well, he's a DA.
He's still substituting for Dan Kaplis, which you would think would be a conflict. But at any rate, but he was one who all of us thought, if you were a liberal, you thought he was a liberal. If you were a conservative, you thought he was a conservative. You figured grassroots or establishment. I mean, everybody thought that he had to take positions. And then once he does, you lose.
Yeah.
You know, the people on the other side. So he did it beautifully for a while anyway. And that's what I think Victor Marks did. Let everybody think he's their guy.
Right. Well, and I think, so to clarify, Barb Kirkmeyer is totally opposed. She wants totally open primary. She wants just a single jungle primary.
Jungle primary.
Scott Bottom.
Effectively, only rich people vote.
Right. And Scott Bottoms is totally for, from everything he said, a system where only Republicans vote in Republican primaries. So that's a key issue. So it'll be interesting. Like I said, my guess is both of them, because you only have to get 30% to get on the ballot. Both of them will get probably 30%.
Well, as I said, Victor Marks is already on the ballot.
Right. So if he comes.
He's got to get at least 10%. He'll get that.
Yeah, he'll get that.
To stay in the thing. But
we'll wrap it up for you guys. And then all things considered, there are sometimes in the assemblies where there's a lot at stake and there's a lot going on. But in this one, I think not as much.
Other than the governor's race, and I don't think that matters either because, you know, the leading candidates were two of the three leading candidates.
Michael Bennett or Phil Weiser.
Well, yeah. Bennett and Weiser, you know, that'll be
it'll be interesting to see who comes out of the Democrat race. Although Michael Bennett might be glad that he decided not to give up a Senate seat. He's like,
yeah, that's smart. I would do that too. Don't apply for the new job and give up your old job before you apply for the new job. But no, he's smart. He's always been a bright guy.
The other thing I wanted to touch on, and then we'll talk about this incredible story in the Denver Post. I mean, talk about Colorado.
Which I cannot find. I did it recently, but I cannot find.
But let's talk just briefly about Iran.
All right. What about Iran?
It's, well, one of the things I'd like to point out is, so The Hill on its website has blasted this thing. Iran closes Strait of Hormuz after Israel bombs Lebanon.
Yeah.
And its source is the Iranian state-sponsored media. And it's like, so President Trump and the White House comes out and says, none of that's true. Not, Israel didn't bomb Lebanon and the Strait of Hormuz is not closed.
I think Israel did bomb Lebanon. They're fighting a war against Hezbollah, which you know, I guess that's Iranian back, but are they supposed to have a universal ceasefire?
No, but what I mean though is they didn't close it. I mean, the bottom line here, what I was going to say is, it's really hard to know what's true, right?
From the Denver Post when we get to that.
And I think, though, I do think it's really disingenuous. One thing we know, if you're looking at the reliability of sources, yes, the White House has, you know, a certain stake in this, as so does Iran. But the Iranian state-run media, I don't know if I were a reputable news organization that I would be basing these giant headlines solely.
I would more than the Denver Post.
But you know what I'm saying, right? I mean, that's certainly a very questionable source. This is, and the White House says, no, it's not true, that the Strait of Hormuz is open.
If I had an oil tanker, I wouldn't be running it.
That's what I was going to say. Because a couple of oil tankers went through, and Carolyn Leavitt said there have been a few things, you know, it's been open, but you're right. If I'm the guy, if, you know, like, oil company A, and the captain's like, should I go now? They'd be like, no, that's just.
Well, I'm the guy on the boat. I wouldn't go, can I risk my life? Or what are you paying? What are you guys paying me anyway?
This whole tanker of oil. So my guess would be that the conflict over whether no boats going or tankers going through or are there is that if you're a tanker, you're just kind of waiting to make sure.
Well, it's not going to have a toll gate or something. You know, you're going through it, and if a bomb hits you, you know, it's not open. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it's not open. All right.
Yeah. So I think that I think is probably part of the problem. But it is interesting, once again, sort of like the opt-out thing. You see, whatever side people are on, if it's the anti-Trump news media is like, it's falling apart. You know, Iran is closing the Strait of Hormuz. Trump's an idiot. And the other side is, no, it's not.
I don't know who I believe. I wouldn't. You know, Iran decides who's going through, right? Apparently, and they decide. And so if they're saying it's closed, well, they can make it closed.
Well, no, but Iran, according to the White House, is not saying it's closed.
Well, wait a minute. How do they know that when they have the Iranian news media say that's what the Hill depended upon was the Iranian news agency?
Yeah, but that'd be like some guy who is, you know, on threat of being beheaded is said, hey, tell everybody that we've closed it. I mean, that's what the White House has said pretty, even starting yesterday, that what the Iranian news would run around is saying publicly and what they're doing privately are two very different things.
I mean, well, I would not send my tanker. No. Nor would I want to be on the tanker filled with flammable fluid as the bombs hit. Yep. They closed it.
I'd like a little more assurance. So, but you know, the stock
market. Like maybe a boat or two, U.S. Navy or something, go with them just so, you know, they all could share in the fun.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But it is, though, I will say, this is what I had predicted before. I said, because, you know, of course, everybody was losing their heads when Trump is like using the strong language, I guess, is putting it mildly, that he would be like, ha ha. And I think this is good. I think probably he did somewhat force Iran. I think there are clearly negotiations. The problem is, as we talked before, who really actually speaks for Iran? I mean, I would think that'd be rule number one.
Well, because Israel kills anybody who pops up. So you don't want to really, you know, sort of all.
Want to raise your hand?
I'm negotiating. Bam, you're dead.
Yeah.
I'm negotiating. Bam, you're.
Well, dead. They all want to go negotiate because then they'll be in Pakistan or something, so they won't get they won't get bombed.
Well, says who? You don't think Israel would attack Pakistan?
Well, not if Marco Rubio's sitting there with them. That's what I'm saying.
If Marco's with them,
yeah, you'd want.
No, they get Mike Huckabee as a hostage one. You put Mike Huckabee with them. Then they wouldn't dare. They wouldn't dare.
No, this is, it's just interesting to me. I mean, to me, bottom line is I think the world is probably a safer place now that we've done this to Iran. Extricating yourself is always, when you talked about way at the beginning when this started, getting in is easy, getting out is much more difficult.
Well, what's difficult is, you know, putting a filter on Trump. Do you really have to say you're going to bomb him back to the cave age and everything else? If you want to, Israel is so much better. They don't say we're going to kill every leader you have. They just do it. They just kill everyone.
Yeah.
And we kind of go, yeah, we'll do this. You can shut up. Just do it.
And I think the other problem you have in terms of negotiating, and we've talked about this before, in Iran, if you lose, you still win, right? I mean, this is a jihad that lasts for generations upon generations upon generations. If they get bombed to smithereens now, they don't care. They'll just come back, and it'll help the recruiting process. They care, but I mean, it's a religion. It's a lifestyle. It's a culture. It's everything. But it's not just a negotiating stance. You know what I mean?
They know that if all of a sudden the son of the last Shah takes over, he probably won't butcher him. But there are lots of other people who's had their mothers and daughters and sons and fathers have been killed by this Iran. And go, oh, never mind. Those nice mullahs. Oh, sure. Let's leave them alone. No, they'll hunt them down and kill them.
Yeah.
And these guys know it. So they're going to go, later.
They show those pictures of Trump is like, we're going to bomb the bridges. And so they show these pictures that they make all the Iranian women and children go stand on the bridge. And again, in the media, it's like, and Trump's the bad guy. It's like, well, wait a minute. Do you know what I mean?
Well, they stand by the bridge. But, you know, yesterday, the Israelis bombed 8 bridges. All where they translated. They didn't say so they could put human touch, just do it.
But that is smarter. So, but anyway, that is that. I just sort of a caution there in terms of who and what you listen to.
Nobody.
Well, there's just some truth to that too. The White House has its spin. The Iranian state media has its spin. And
our media has their spin.
Depending on who you want, who you're for right now is.
Yeah, you get the right spin master going.
Okay, so talk about spin. Then we can talk about the Denver, do you want to start or do you want me to?
No, you go ahead.
So two big stories that really aren't getting played very much at all in the media, except the Denver Post. So the Colorado Chamber of Commerce did a study recently, and it looked at businesses fleeing Colorado. It talked to them about why. It talked to businesses who could have come here and didn't come here. And to make a long story short, I mean, there are, and we'll do an in-depth show later on this with all of the numbers, but Colorado is losing big corporations, little corporations, little businesses, restaurants at an incredible rate, more than it's ever happened before, right? And the business leaders at the chamber talk to say that Colorado, you know, and particularly the city of Denver, is worse than anything but LA. It's worse than any other city in this.
Hey, we want to be number one, though.
Right, in terms of being difficult to work with, having regulations, being slow, having ridiculous laws and requirements, worse than anything but in the whole country than LA, right? So tied into this, but not known by the Denver Post, so some census figures came out. And last year, I mean, we've talked about Colorado, people are emigrating, right? Last year, it was the slowest population gain since the 1990s. And apparently, really, the only population gain was illegal immigrants.
Yeah, yeah. Which they call, in the Denver Post, international immigration.
Yeah.
When they say international immigration, they're not talking about legal ones from no. across the world. They're talking about illegal. But they don't want to say illegal immigration. So, you know, it's always the word change. So that's... Yeah. International.
So once you take
Mexico, it's international.
Once you take out the illegal immigrants, then Colorado is losing population. Of the 64 counties in Colorado, half of them lost people, including Arapahoe, Denver, Boulder, and Pueblo. And they're predicting next year, once we can't be, since Trump has cracked down on the illegal immigration, it'll be even worse. And now the Denver Post would have you believe that this is because of affordable housing.
No, but so the biggest one is that Denver's losing out, Denver Boulder. And so that's a huge one, right?
Yeah.
So no, they say Jackson County. Jackson County is losing because they didn't want to do the county that Telluride's in, I think it's San Miguel. They didn't want to do Picton County, which is where
Aspen
is. So, you know, they want to pick out some incredibly hoked oak. And I don't even know where Jackson County is.
They pick a county that most people are like.
And I know a lot of counties. I have no idea where Jackson County is. I guess we could look it up. But, they lost. And why are they losing? Oh, affordability in Jackson County. Oh, yeah, sure. All the, you know, the massive McMansions are empty in Jackson County or something. I mean, the whole thing. You would not know that the state's biggest city and its biggest market, which is the Boulder, Denver market and so forth, is hemorrhaging people. Yeah, you know that Jackson County is losing some people on affordability issues.
And that's what they tied it to. Now, they don't even remotely tie it into the fact that we have had all kinds of businesses, you know, tens of thousands of jobs, millions and millions and millions of dollars flee the state because Colorado and the Denver metropolitan area is so unfriendly to businesses. It's because we don't have enough affordable housing. I mean, everywhere you go, they're building apartments that no one is going to be living in right now.
There are going to be some good bargains.
Yeah.
Just like so there were office space. Now there's going to be some great ones. You know, Westminster, under our wonderful city government, has gone full bore for more housing. It's all around us.
But no one lives in it. I mean, we drive.
Well, they drive by, and they got one house up, and that one's probably unoccupied. And so, I mean, it's just a joke. This affordability, which is the mantra that the Democrats seized on, and with some success, including Westminster, now is their mantra for everything.
Right. So, well, again, and the reason people can't afford houses is because they don't have a job. And the reason they don't have a job is because Colorado is chasing all of the employers out, right? You look at the minimum wage in Denver, which is like the highest. It's like, so if you own restaurants are fleeing Denver saying, right, we can't do business here. You know, first of all, there's constant construction because you're putting up a bike lane that no one will use. So no one can park in front of my restaurant.
Parking at all.
Right. And now they want to pass a law that says, well, we can't have straws or knives or forks. I mean, it's just ridiculous that the burden that they place on businesses, and businesses, kind of like people, can vote with their feet and they can say, well, why would we want to come to Colorado? It's bad enough there already. You're trying to make it worse. It's like New York, right? Yeah. Pretty soon they'll be begging. Jared Polis will be like, come on back from But it's just...
Well, he didn't kick him out like Kathy Hochul. Kathy, get out of here, take a bus, go down to Florida. You might, oh, please don't go. Please, no.
Right.
It's like your girlfriend telling you, I'm leaving, you know, get out of here. Okay, I'm gone. No, what are you doing? Well, don't leave. I'm just kidding. You know, I want you to beg. Come on, please.
But, and it's a disingenuousness of the Post and just poor reporting. Because like you said, you know, they hide it. They talk about that it's a bad thing, but then they pick out this county no one ever heard of. And they forget the fact that some of them that have traditionally been the fastest growing places are losing people. And they make no connection to the fact that they're chasing businesses out.
Yeah, you wouldn't know this. You think it's just, you know, it's just, we've got to prevent companies moving in because you know, then they'll have people who want to buy houses. We can't have that. And I love the thing that this idea that, you know, houses are not coming down. And you kind of go, that's because what happens in any kind of housing crash is it doesn't just crash. Normally what it does is that it just hovers. It's kind of like Roadrunner above the canyon. You know, he's hovering, they look at him, boom!
Yeah.
And so if there's more and more inventory, less and less, harder to sell, well, after a while, what happens? If people start, because they have to at some point, they can afford to take it off the market, but they can't, then they have to start dropping prices. And prices will inevitably start to decrease as rents are decreasing all across Colorado.
Well, and then you look at what's happening in the downtown office towers, right? There was another one in the entire office tower that, it, like, I think in 2019, something like that, sold for like $130 million, sold for $5 million. And as, you know, our listener Jacob points out, think about that just the property taxes in Denver, right? I mean, all of the downtown office building. And the thing is that they're empty because we're chasing businesses out. The reason that they're selling, because they're being seized and, you know, by banks and things like that, is because no one's in them, because no one is working in Denver, because Colorado is chasing all of the businesses away, but they're incredibly unfriendly, hostile even, business policies and regulations.
Yes.
And it's like the media in this town drives me crazy because they make no connection, right? There's no connection between the fact that there are no jobs, the downtown office spaces are crashing, the city of Denver has no money, the state of Colorado has a $1.5 billion budget deficit, and it's all because we don't have enough affordable housing.
Yeah, everything's affordable housing.
Well, and then they pass that ridiculous law, it's with Polis sign, that like the RTD and NGOs can now build affordable housing on their properties. It's like, they're going to become like the RTD, which can't even function a bus,
right.
is going to become a slumlord.
Yeah, it'll be great. They'll be absolutely great. Unbelievable. And the headline was something about, you know, rural counties losing people. What are you talking about? It's Denver. It's the one in Denver Post. You know, I mean,
counties kind of sort of are always losing people.
Yeah, they'll eventually run out of them. But, right. it wasn't Jackson County.
No, it was the main ones were Arapahoe, Denver, Boulder, and Pueblo.
Then
Adams were growing. And they say, well, that's because of affordable housing. Well, yes. But again, because those are people buying houses. You don't have millions of illegal immigrant renters being subsidized by the government flooding the markets up there in Weld County. So, until the policymakers and the Democrats change, that's not going to change. You got to wonder, though, how bad it's going to be before they do something.
Well, be a day late and a dollar short. You can count on that. But I just love the disingenuous article and, you know, it's a big news, right? I mean, it's big news. So you would think, okay, we got to do a story on this. Let me do a story. And I think, you know, maybe somebody else can find it online, but I couldn't find it. I think they got so embarrassed by people saying, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Right. I'm looking. You talk. I'm looking at Jackson County.
Well, you know, we have good news, though. Actually, one good thing. Congratulations to Chuck. How about if we don't? We have congratulations to Chuck. The city of Glendale, Chuck was the, I don't know what, sort of the one of the campaign strategists.
I'm a campaign worker boy.
Campaign worker boy won. The city of Glendale had three city council seats,
four
city council seats, and your slate took them off.
All four.
Yay. So city of Glendale is in safe hands.
In good hands. Yes, absolutely. So that was great. The other thing we're going to feature on Monday is what happened in Lakewood. Lakewood has a socialist democratic mayor and city council, and they and this weird, sick combination of far left Democrats and developers get together in order to gentrify everything. You know, the developers want to get rid of single family homes that are there because, well, you know, if you want to make money, you just kiss it.
Yeah.
More and more units, more and more density. So they adopted a series of ones. The usual lying, tricky stuff. Say, okay, now you have duplexes, triplexes, you got everything else, but you have to have at least 50% green space. On what? You just destroyed the house, and so there's nothing left. I mean, after you developed everything, that, you know, that 12 feet, half of that has to be open space. I mean, it's a joke, right?
Yeah.
We go, oh, we're a green space people. Bullshit. And so Cardell Homes and all the other ones, they outspent them 6-7-8-1. I mean, I think the last one was.
Well, you did. This is an election to essentially to roll back.
Yes,
so Lakewood passed a bunch of laws. The city of Lakewood city council passed a bunch of laws, essentially turning the city that would turn the city into a high density hellhole. And so the citizens revolted, and this was an election to basically repeal a bunch of those laws.
And they did. But they found another 7,000 votes. here they are. Oh, they're all for the developer and the Socialist Democrats. What an amazing find. Make every vote count, especially when they're manufacturing.
Been like something significant. Wait, they found what they lost? How would they lose it? It was a one-day election, right?
Yeah, and they can't. It's silly. They put up on the site official results will be up there by April 17th. What are they consult with Britta Horn? I mean, it's April 7th of the election, and you're going to figure it out in 10 days by just figuring out every crooked thing you can do.
But it appears though that the people won. You know, and again, sometimes when you start getting into the housing things, that's sort of a nonpartisan issue, particularly in cities where people, you know, you have your homes. But, again, the cities, they're pushing this high density, and the Denver Post goes along with it. It's like the reason Colorado was, you know, losing people is because we just don't have enough high density hellhole places to live.
We need more hellhole places, and we got to get them as fast. And they did it. It got defeated in Littleton, too. That was another big one. All right, folks, I know you've been waiting. So Jackson County is on the exact northern edge of Colorado. It's adjoining Wyoming. It's a couple counties in, kind of sort of where Denver is on your
directly
east-west axis and so forth. So it's toward the San Madre Range. And so all of a sudden, it's lost people to the panic of the entire state.
Because they didn't have enough affordable housing.
Yes.
You know, who would have thought, we were talking about this earlier, that we would have long.
You like this, Julie. It is the least populated county, the fourth least populated county in the state. This is where the Denver Post, it has a population of 1,379. And some people are moving out of Jackson County. So the Denver Post has to be ashamed of themselves. Those reporters, they just have to go. We give up. I mean, we're just such tools. Can we get a grant? Can we get a climate change grant or something?
Well, yeah, they have those. They're running things there too. Well, like you said, sometimes with the housing market that turns around, but I don't think it's going to be hard to turn around Colorado. Again, if you're a business like Palantir leaves, all these businesses leave, the high-tech industries fleeing,
oil and gas.
Yeah.
They've done that. Coal, you know, they've done away with that.
Restaurants.
Trump is getting rid of all the, you know, N cars and everything else up in Boulder. So those won't be around. So what is it that's a growth industry that's replacing them?
Right.
And the Post won't tell you,
Well, it's not like companies change headquarters all the time. And again, it just becomes such a bad place. It gets a bad reputation. And like the downtown office towers, right? It it accumulates. You go downtown, and because they don't arrest homeless people and they don't arrest drug usage and drug dealers, you go downtown, it's dangerous, it's scary looking, no one else is there.
You might as well be by an Iranian bridge.
Right, yeah, really.
Come on downtown and see if you make it through the experience.
And the city, they won't acknowledge it. And so until you acknowledge a problem, you can't solve it. And as long as they keep making a problem, so, you know.
Well, how will anybody find out it's a problem?
Yeah.
Other than, you know, apocryphal stories and stuff. I mean, the Denver Post won't print it. I mean, it'll just, Jackson County crime is up. Somebody yesterday punched somebody, and so we have a crime wave in Jackson County.
100% increase in crime.
So. 1,379 people, and they focus on that as far as population. Oh, forget the, you know, million or whatever it is in Denver. No, Jackson County's having trouble. Big trouble in Jackson County.
Sometimes it surprises, well, the people even stay in Denver, but I guess so they do because they can't sell their house, so they can't buy a new one. So,
well, you can sell your house still, but it's going to be there's going to be, you know, what you first get is people either take them off the market or they keep them on, but at some point, let's say they're moving or their parents died, and say some point they've got to start selling them, and once they sell them, then they're a much lower price, and therefore when people look up, you know, okay, so, you know, X amount per square foot is what you go. No, now it's X minus Y square foot.
Well, and then again, the state legislature facing a $1.5 billion shortfall. I mean, in no small part to the fact that they're funding, they're using Medicaid, which the state paid for, to fund health care for illegal immigrants. Now, it was supposed to cost the state, I think, $14 million and about
surprise, surprise, surprise.
Ended up like $130 million. It's like,
surprise,
if you took a whole bunch of illegal immigrants, then you're going to have free everything if you come to Colorado, they come here. Well, go figure. But the state, rather than wanting to cut that, right? No, we can't touch that. Instead, they want to cut funding to various services that actually affect people in Colorado.
Well, and I heard Barb Kirkmeyer, our Rhino candidate for governor, Jeff and Billy's show, because she's on the Joint Budget Committee, and she voted for the budget. She said, yeah, what we did is we retained public education in Colorado, and we transferred one-time transfers of funds, but that's, you know.
It's going to raise Tabor. They're going to try to eliminate
Tabor. Oh, they got to eliminate Tabor because they're going so broke. It's like, so fast.
The only thing that keeps us within spending limits. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for us. Like we said, on Monday, we'll talk to the Victory folks from Lakewood. We'll have the wrap-up of what happens at the assembly. It's going to be pretty interesting there. But in the meantime, thank you, everybody. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Take care.